Hey everyone, welcome to Ajay and Nathan Discuss Movies, a show in which we discuss movies both old and new. Today we have a new episode. As you can probably tell, Nathan is obviously out for today's episode. He'll be indefinitely out of the podcast. There is no set timetable as to when he'll return. But for now, you're stuck with me, and if he comes back, we'll welcome him back with open arms and open hearts. But today, we have two new movies that dropped in the theaters this past weekend. One of them was an amazing film with great leads, a great cast, great script, great direction, and overall kick-ass time at the theaters. The other film was The Toxic Avenger. The first film, obviously, that we'll be discussing is Caught Stealing, directed by Darren Aronofsky. It dropped in the theaters this past weekend. Stars Austin Butler in the main role, as Austin Butler is a former baseball player who suddenly moves to New York City after his time in California, who no longer is a baseball player because of a really bad car accident that not only killed his teammate, but also injured himself in the process. As a result, he moves to New York in this pretty dingy apartment and gets involved with the wrong people. And as a result, craziness ensues from there. Overall, I really loved this film. I thought it was an amazing film. Austin Butler obviously does a great job in this film. If you guys don't know about the film, it's a film that is based off the Charlie Houston book of the same name. Charlie Houston actually wrote the screenplay, as is so with many Darren Aronofsky films. The author of those books often writes the screenplay for the books that the movie is based off of. And heading into my thoughts on this film, I want to say that I really loved it. I thought this was an amazing film. By no means do I think it will be in my top five or in the State of the Film address, but I really did enjoy it. To me, I sort of view this film as Darren Aronofsky at his most accessible. Meaning, if you don't enjoy the overall gratuitousness of Requiem for a Dream, if you don't enjoy the religious metaphors that were prevalent within Mother and Noah, if you didn't enjoy the heart gut-wrenching performances of Natalie Portman and Mickey Rourke that were so under the skin and so close to the skin that it was unsettling, you'll enjoy this film. This film, I think, is under the same vibe and on the same wavelength as, say, heist films of the 80s and 90s. This is a dark comedy film, and it really utilizes that to its advantage. There are certain characters in this film, there are certain actors in this film that did really good. Austin Butler, I thought, was really good in this film. Oftentimes when we think of Austin Butler, we often think of him as this stoic individual. An individual that is able to use his screen presence to really allow the audience to be captivated by it. When you think about Dune Part 2, you think of him as Fatal Rotha. When you think of the bike riders, yes, while there were lines of dialogue that Austin Butler had in that film, you're sort of focused on the larger-than-life character that he embodies within that film. Eddington, another great example, where he plays a Russell Brand ripoff character who is able to really captivate Joaquin Phoenix's character, not just Joaquin Phoenix's character, but also Emma Stone's character as well. But with this film, it's Austin Butler at his most earthly. It is Austin Butler at his most human. And I thought that was a really cool dynamic and really added another dimension to a rather two-dimensional character that we saw on screen. Zoe Kravitz also does really well with the limited amount of screen time that she has in the film. She is in the film for quite often, early in the beginning, but then one thing happens and then she's no longer in the film. Obviously, we're not going to get into spoilers. We may get into spoilers later on in the review, but for now, we'll just sort of give a brief overview as to what the film's about. In my opinion, the best performance in this entire film goes to Regina King. Like, do you know how good of an actor you gotta be to pretend that black and white cookies are good? I obviously kid and jest, but I thought that was really good. Regina King stole the show for me. And I think, by and large, she's definitely the best actor working in this film, and it really shows. Because I think that her acting, her ability to play a rather conniving individual, but still offer a level of humanity to it, is something that a lot of actors have a difficult time processing and really adjusting. So yeah, overall, I really did enjoy this film. I thought it was really fun, enjoyable. Other positives that I can give this film is that the set design is also really good. This film takes place in New York, and in a lot of ways, New York acts as a character to the city, because for most of this film, or more so for the two-thirds of this film, last two-thirds of this film, it basically devolves into this chase, into this heist, and areas such as Coney Island, Shea Stadium, because this does occur in the 90s, New York, so it wouldn't be Citi Field, it would be at Shea Stadium. Coney Island, Shea Stadium, areas that are sort of synonymous with Darren Aronofsky's work, especially with Requiem for a Dream, is often utilized quite well in this film. So overall, I really enjoyed this film. We can certainly get into spoilers later on, but I thought this was a really fun film, and I think if you're going to watch this film, definitely watch other films that embody the same vibe as this film. I remember watching a Letterboxd interview with Austin Butler and Darren Aronofsky, and they mentioned After Hours, the Martin Scorsese film in the 80s that is very similar to this film. In fact, I think it was like the last Martin Scorsese film that wasn't from an adapted screenplay. So if you're going to watch this film, definitely watch After Hours as a companion piece to this film. We can obviously get more into other parts of this film that were sort of negatives. Not negatives, but, you know, things that sort of stuck out like a sore thumb. You gotta sort of take logic out the window. There's a certain moment in time in this film where things just escalate to the 10th power, to the highest degree. And while it's all fun and enjoyable while watching it, and while it's certainly action-packed and very dense and really allows you to enjoy the film, you do question certain parts of it. And that's good. I think questioning things is really good. But logic flies out the window very fast in this film. So I would say go under your own discretion, because there are more questions than answers after a certain point. But that's just what happens with heist films in general. Laura Dern makes an appearance at the end of this film, and I thought that really, really allowed me to really enjoy it and have a full circle moment with this film. But yeah, I thought this was a great film. It really depicts and sort of delves into the idea of abuse, which is not just through Austin Butler's character of alcohol abuse or friend abuse, because he does abuse the people in his life so much so. Whether it's his girlfriend, played by Zoe Kravitz, whether it's his manager, his baseball teammate, who he kills in a car accident, abuse is prevalent within this film. And I think that this film does a really good job at depicting that, as well as the other themes of this film that they sort of focus on as well. So yeah, I think this is a great film. I think this is a film that if this was released 20, 30 years ago, it would easily be making 80, 90 million in the box office. Obviously not in the first week, but gross sales overall during its run at the box office. But unfortunately, it's released in the year 2025, where theatrical releases are viewed as an afterthought by studios, and it's not of the utmost concern. To them, to studios, their utmost concern is just dumping it out on streaming and then seeing what happens from then on out, which stinks. So if you are a fan of heist films, if you're a fan of Austin Butler, if you're a fan of Darren Aronofsky's work, I think you should definitely go watch this in the theater, because it's easily one of the better films that was released in the theaters this past weekend. So please go watch it. We need more films of this nature at the box office, because it's needed. We need original stories in the box office. We need original stories playing in theaters. You know, Spike Lee's newest movie, Highest to Lowest, starring Denzel Washington and A$AP Rocky, did not get a wide theatrical release. It was released in independent movie theaters, but not an actual wide theatrical release. Apple Studios decided to release it on their platform a few weeks after its initial release. That's not good news. You know, a director of Spike Lee's nature should not be viewed in streaming. Movies from Spike Lee should be watched on the big screen, because he is one of the most talented directors working today. And in the same vein, I think this film occupies that same space. So definitely go watch, Caught Stealing. It's a great film, and I think it's definitely well worth your time watching. All right, now let's get into the bad film of this review. Obviously, as you can probably tell, I'm not going to spoil any of these films, because to spoil it, I think, would necessitate a co-host, and unfortunately, we don't have that with us today. It's a little bit difficult to film these discussions without a co-host, because I do think that the dynamic really works, especially when discussing film. But we'll work with what we have right now, and that is with just me, solely the host for today's show. So no spoilers. Maybe for this film, I will discuss spoilers, because I think there's no real reason as to why I wouldn't spoil it, because I know it's pretty bad. but if you have an interest in watching this next film, then obviously click away from this video. All right. So this next film is The Toxic Avenger, directed by, and let me pull up his name, because I willingly decided to forget it. Macon Blair, directed The Toxic Avenger. The film stars Peter Dinklage in the main role, as Peter Dinklage is down on his luck. He's the janitor for this pharmaceutical corporation, and he's currently going through some back pains, some really bad medical issues, and he's not able to pay off his medical debt in time. So he seeks out the CEO to help pay his debt off, and it's to no avail. So the film is basically a revenge thriller, a revenge superhero movie, if you will, of Peter Dinklage getting his comeuppance and fighting for not only himself, but for his son as well. All right, I'll just come straight from the hip, shoot straight from the hip. I didn't like this movie. I didn't think it was that great. Heading into this film, what I wanted was a B-movie that occupied the same space as, say, Scott Pilgrim and early James Gunn 2010 films, such as Super, maybe even the same vein as Kick-Ass. I wanted a film of that nature that was different, that was willing to test the limits of the superhero subgenre. And then at a certain point in time in the movie, well, early into the movie, I'd say like 5-10 minutes in, I was like, okay, I'm clearly not going to get that from this movie. What I want is essentially a satirization of superhero movies. I want a satirization of superhero movies in the same vein as, say, Airplane or Blazing Saddles, something of that nature, where it essentially pokes fun at superhero movies from afar at a B-movie way, that it's tongue-in-cheek, and that is over the top. And what I got instead was a film that played into the tropes and cliches of superhero movies, but without it being self-aware. This film struggled tonally for me. I felt as if there were times in this film where the film wanted me to sort of venture into the film and laugh at it and really enjoy it. And there are times that of the film in which they tried to play it very sincere. And that tonal meshing, that tonal inconsistency, was prevalent throughout this entire film. I sort of said this in my Letterboxd review, which it's not really a review, but it was just my sort of observation on this film. This film is basically the superhero movie version of Kyle Mooney's Y2K. So if you enjoy Kyle Mooney's Y2K, you'll enjoy this film. But it was very similar to that. You know, you have the inclusion of a band that makes pretty bad music. This one scene in particular that has really bad green screen, which I love, by the way. I thought the bad green screen scene was amazing. I really love it. I don't know why, but bad green screen is up my forte. I think right now we're in an era where everybody's so focused on being clean. Everyone's so focused on having the right aesthetic, on having the right sort of look of a movie, and the fact that a movie can just go out there with horrible green screen is admirable, to say the least. And I thought that if the film honed in on that, it could have been a much more enjoyable film. Obviously, I know this is a B-movie. I know that this film is a remake of the 1984 cult classic, but I wanted it to be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek and more self-aware of what it was trying to go for. Unfortunately, this film didn't do that. And as a result, the film suffered because of it. That's not to say that there aren't any positives. Obviously, I mentioned the green screen. That was really funny. I also thought the CEO, the antagonist CEO, was hilarious. To me, he sort of came across as a mix between Brian Johnson and Bruno, the Sacha Baron Cohen movie. For some reason, his getup, his attire really reminded me of that. But yeah, I thought that was definitely the standout. I mean, when he becomes a werewolf, spoiler alert, the villain becomes a werewolf and he gets these crazy powers. I think he's married to Millie Bobby Brown's character. Millie Bobby Brown, I don't know what she was trying to go for. I felt like the character that they threw her was just, hey, just play Millie Bobby Brown and we'll work our way around it. I don't know if that was Millie Bobby Brown. I'm not so sure. She looked very much similar to Millie Bobby Brown. We'll obviously add in a correction over here. If it was a different actor. But yeah, I just thought she was horrible. I just thought she served no real focus on the movie. But I felt Peter Dinklage's side character was good. I thought she was really good in the film. So yeah, I just thought that this film didn't utilize the cheesiness and the corniness that I wanted it to be. For a film that tried its best to buck orthodoxy, my God, did it try to fit in with the binary of the MCU, DCU universe films. This, to me, I felt like was a film that tried to not be as funny as Peacemaker, that tried to be not as unique or clever as Guardians of the Galaxy, a film that tried to tastefully rip off other films. You know, when you think of the way that the Toxic Avengers formed by a medical mishap, that's basically just Darkman. When you think about the fact that he's able to heal from bullet wounds, that's basically The Crow. It's a film that plays off of superhero movies, but doesn't do so in a way that's self-aware or that is in on the joke. And a lot of times in this film, I was laughing not necessarily with the movie, but at the movie. And that is an issue. So again, while I enjoy B-movies, while I enjoy So Bad It's Good movies, we've obviously discussed certain films of that nature on this channel, I just felt as if this film didn't know what it was trying to go for. Towards the end of the film, the movie, the villain, spoiler alert, the villain gets stuck in a car, and as a result, the characters get doused in blood. And that was eerily reminiscent to that Freddy Got Fingered scene, which I love. I thought that that scene in particular was great. And I thought that if the film leveraged that moment and made it sort of go deeper and deeper into that end, it would have been fun. It would have been enjoyable. I wanted craziness, you know? I didn't get into this movie thinking I was going to get, you know, Adam Sandler superhero movie. I didn't want that. I wanted something that embraced the cheesiness and corniness. I thought that there would be a lot of potential with this film. I thought that maybe it could lead into, you know, a cult-like fan base, and I'm sure it's going to get a cult-like fan base. I'm sure people will have an interest in watching this on further and further viewings, but I feel like if I watch this a second time, I would be even more critical of this film. So that's all to say, I did not enjoy this film, but I'm sure people will. So if you are one of those people, let me know down below. So anyways, guys, those are my thoughts on the two movies that were released this past weekend. I'm not going to watch The Roses. I have very, very little interest in that movie, and nor do I know what movie I'll be watching next. Maybe it's Splitsville. Maybe it's a blast from the past with a different individual. If Nathan is obviously out, then with a stand-up comedian friend of mine that also has an interest in films. But what are your thoughts on these two movies? Let me know down below. Did you love it? Did you hate it? How would you, I don't want to borrow from Anthony Fantano, but how would you describe these films? How would you describe these films to those who would never ever watch these films? Actually, screw that. If you have stuck around to the end of this video, please put in the hashtag we want Nathan down below, because it's very, very difficult to run a show as the only host of the show. It really is. So please, if you can, please put in the hashtag We Want Nathan. I want this trending. I want there to be traffic. I want there to be not engagement. That's the wrong choice of words there, but the poor choice of words there. But I want there to be interest in having a co-host again, because obviously he will be back. It's just a matter of when, not if. Please put in the hashtag We Want Nathan. Other than that, we are now a bookshop.org affiliate. So if you have an interest in any of the books that we have an interest in and we did enjoy reading, press the link and we'll get a referral out of it. You probably tell that we've been recommending books rather infrequently on this channel, but I just thought it'd be important to at least say it publicly, because a lot of times we don't really mention it. So please buy a book. Referral links is down below. Our own bookstore is down below. And other than that, guys, that is it for today. It is very tough to run a podcast by yourself. So yeah, we'll see you guys next week. We don't know what movie we'll be discussing, but it should be fun nonetheless. All right, guys. See ya.